As a pastor, you know exactly what happens when you faithfully apply biblical principles to any life situation. You do this with every sermon you preach or class that you teach. The God of all hope, peace, and order shows up, and oftentimes in completely unexpected ways. Things that were, quite frankly, not supposed to happen, happen. Light and hope emerge from darkness and despair. This is our God at work. We'd like to introduce you to Momentum, a 9-week church-wide financial stewardship plan built directly on biblical principles that will teach your congregation how to manage God's money, God's way, and will usher in radical change. The Momentum team will help you take the hardest step, the first one, and we will walk with you the entire way through. And the first step is coming to a Momentum training event near you. This stress-free 2-day training event will truly equip you and your leadership team with the easy-to-follow steps needed to implement this plan from start to finish. And for a limited time, we're offering the regular $299 training event rate now for $99, but only until December 31st. To learn more and to find out where the nearest training event will be for you, visit us at daveramsey.com/momentum. Take the first step in faith and watch what God will do. This is the Leadership Momentum Podcast with Chris Brown.
Well, hello, leaders, and Merry Christmas to you. Here we are, just a few days away from the big day. On this week's podcast, I'll be talking to Pastor Levi Lusco about leading when it comes to the toughest subjects, like sex. Just feels weird to say that to a bunch of church leaders, but like the topic of sex, pornography, and even overcoming intense grief. Levi's one of the best in the country at doing this, just kind of in a bold way and also very accurately at the same time. My prayer is that as a result of this episode, that it gives us all more confidence to approach these subjects that are so real in the church. The church is counting on us to biblically lead them in these areas. So that's what this podcast is all about. Levi Lusco is the author of the best-selling book, Through the Eyes of a Lion. He's the pastor of Fresh Life Church, a multi-site church in Montana and also in Utah. He's the founder of Skull Church and the O2 Experience. And his new book, Swipe Right, it is unbelievably eye-opening. Well, Levi is a pretty busy guy right now with writing, with leading, traveling, and speaking. Those of you that kind of follow the speaking circuit, he's got tremendous insight, just a very godly guy. And I have the utmost respect for him. And I'm very thankful that we as a community get to hear from him about these things. I know you'll be motivated, that you'll be inspired by this conversation. So as you listen in, I want to encourage you, try to listen in from a few different angles. From a parenting angle, those of you who are parents, obviously we're talking about premarital sex and pornography and those kind of things. So those of you that are parents or about to be parents, that's a great angle to listen in with. Also, as a friend, you've got folks all around you that deal with these real life issues of they've got kids that struggle with these things and they themselves struggle with these things. And then the third angle, and there might be more, but as for me, what I'm thinking about right now is, and the way that I listen into the conversation is also as a pastor, the congregation, your team, your staff, paid or non-paid, these are real tensions for them too. Overcoming grief, and navigating through pornography and navigating through premarital sex. So that's where we're headed, and here we go. Now, here's my recent ministry conversation with Pastor Levi Lusco. Well, Levi, thank you so much for joining us here on the Leadership Momentum Podcast.
Man, thank you for having me, Chris. I'm so excited. Been following what God's doing through you guys. Glad to be on.
You know, recently I was at Elevation Church and you were speaking, and you know, you're just a guy that I've been drawn to in a lot of ways, your ministry and the way that you do ministry. I was there at Elevation, you were speaking, and of course you were talking about Swipe Right, your new book, relatively new book. And it's funny, my 11-year-old and my 13-year-old came into the main auditorium, which they don't do that very often, but they decided to this particular weekend. And here you are, just flat out confronting sex head on. So it really created a lot of conversations in my household. And we're always, you know, erring on the side of having the conversation earlier than later. We just want to own that conversation. So that's the kind of parents that we are. I know some people shy away from that, but that's just the way we're wired. When I thought about having you on the podcast, I thought through, man, there's so many things we can talk about. Talk about leadership through the eyes of a lion, swipe right, leading a multi-site church in several states. And there's lots of value that you can bring. And what I love about you the most, and that is you run straight toward topics that are hard to talk about, sex and grief, when it comes to your writings, at least. And so I just wanted to talk about that a little bit, if you're okay with that, and just like, let's just tackle it head on. Are you good with that?
That's fantastic. Let's go.
When it comes to the swipe right, take us back to when you like you originally said, you know what? We've got to write on something like this. Was there a moment like you were maybe sitting down having some coffee with your wife, or I don't know where you're at, but you're just like, you know what? We have to write a resource on this because there isn't anything out there. And you guys decided to do that. What was it that motivated you to do that?
Well, you know, it's a couple things. I mean, there's like anything, it's more process than just single event. But we have been communicating the message that is at the heart of Swipe Right ever since my wife and I got married 13 years ago. You know, I had a background, as I share in the book, of pornography. I was exposed to porn as a sixth grader. My next door neighbor took me into his garage, showed me a big collection that his dad kept in there of pornographic magazines. And, you know, I talk about in the book how he gave me a couple of them to take home with me, and I buried them in the backyard. And there was like weeks after that where I would, you know, dig them up and look at them and then, you know, swear that was the last time. And it's such a vivid, you know, it reminds me of the biblical story of Achan, who stole things from Jericho he wasn't supposed to take and hid them under the tent. And the funniest thing, the saddest thing about it is later on, they get to the next battle of Ai, and God says, take all the treasure, it's all yours. That Jericho was just a test. It was like a tithe. Give me the first, and then I'll give you the rest. But Achan didn't get to go to Ai and see what God had for him because he was dead before they ever got there because of what he took and hid in the dirt. And so that kind of was a formative experience for me of taking something that wasn't bad, meaning God built my sexual desire. God built all of us with a sex drive. The problem isn't having a sex drive. The problem is letting sex drive. So for me, it was taking what God wanted to give me all along. And so my journey was figuring out how to make sense of the mistakes I had made in that way, where my wife honored God, did things his way. And we were comparing notes on our honeymoon and just really saying, man, God's way is so much better. And what he had for us here, we were kind of an AI experiencing the blessing and going, we want more people to do things God's way. And so that began a 12-year journey of us preaching on the message of strength and honor and sex as an awesome gift that's to be enjoyed, but a powerful one that's to be used carefully. And what happened was I was going to write on that early on. I had kind of started thinking about this needs to be a book because you can reach more people with a book than you can with events all around the country. And then my daughter went to heaven suddenly, which I'm sure we'll get into that at some point. And when that happened, I was never going to write a grief book, but I ended up writing the book that I couldn't find in the bookstores on not getting through grief, but how to get something out of it and be used powerfully in the midst of hurting. So Eyes of a Lion was the message that I never would have wanted to write, but it was the life that God allowed us to have, the story that we lived. And so the O2 experience, which was the event I used to preach the sex message at, that becoming a book was more natural and made more sense, actually, because that has been something we've been doing for so long.
So I think for us to be able to shepherd through this, the whole idea of pornography and sex outside of marriage, just really kind of honing in on the swipe right for right now, we got to understand the problem. And I know for me, my eyes were opened when I was there at Elevation and kind of listening to you deliver this talk. What is the research saying? And, you know, you shared some research to me that I was just like, unbelievable. I cannot believe it. And it kind of awoken me to really raise my kids a little bit more intentionally in this area.
Well, Chris, that is just the shocking thing of it is kids aren't having to be taken to the garage to be shown a box of magazines anymore, you know, because you and I both have lived through the most, you know, catastrophic, titanic shift of epic proportions that the world's ever seen in the unleashing of the internet and then the internet going mobile. It's impossible to overstate what a game changer it is that we all carry the internet around in our pockets. The entire internet is in our pocket at all time. And the fact that I'm sitting here in Montana and you're in Nashville, but we're just seamlessly talking. Like, when in the 6,000 recorded years of history has that ever been a possibility?
That's so true.
So you think about all of recorded history, more has changed in the last 30 years than in the previous 5,970 in the internet. And pretty soon there's going to be commercial space travel. So we have to just realize, someone said, seldom do people realize the historic when they're living through it. And millennials have lived through the internet becoming widely available. Now, our kids will never know life without an internet. My five-year-old talks to Alexa and asks for the music to be put on. And so you just think like, okay, this is very, very different. And so with sex, one-third of the internet is pornographic. One out of four Google searches are for porn or sexual in nature. And then when it comes to dating and the way that apps have come around that facilitate no strings attached sexual encounters, where you could be in any city in America and fire up Tinder, and within a couple hours, you could basically find someone to be having sex with that night without ever having to be a girlfriend or boyfriend, without ever having to go to a bar or a club. And basically, it's like calling for an Uber, but with a sexual experience. And Tinder, Wired Magazine did a story about how there's been a trillion swipes on Tinder. So, I mean, it's massive. How different it is today than it was 20 years ago.
Wow. So obviously you've defined the problem really well for us, and it's epic. And I think a lot of folks know it's a problem, but didn't know it was that big of a problem. They're kind of like me sitting there in the seats. Best ways to shepherd in this area. I think right now it just feels like there's this big mountain in front of us. We've got this congregation that's in front of us, this group of people that God's entrusted us to shepherd well. And we've got this big problem. How do you recommend us kind of helping people in this area?
Well, that's such a good way. It's a good way to put it. Shepherding people in this area. I think you don't let the immensity of the journey overwhelm you. That's key. Anytime you look at a whole mountain, you're like, gosh, how do we climb the mountain? We're going to climb it one step at a time. And we're going to do so understanding how tall the mountain is. If we don't, we're not going to bring the right gear. We're not going to pace ourselves right. We're not going to pick the right base camps. You don't just go up Everest. You sleep at the base for a while. You go a little bit forward, a little bit back, a little bit forward, a little bit more back. You know, you have to acclimate. And so I think, you know, for parents of children and for those of us who are dealing with this personally ourselves, which is all of us, we understand that it's there. And we're not going to pretend like the bad world doesn't exist. First of all, it would be very tempting to say, okay, that's it. No internet, no anything, no TV. I mean, we're going to abandon it. But then I would ask you this question: how can we reach a world that we've abandoned? The monastic movement that said, hey, we don't want to be defiled. The Pharisees, they started out good. They didn't want to be defiled while in captivity. So you said, let's be separated. That's a good desire, but their conclusions were wrong. God never wants us to be out of the world, but in the world, just not of it. So for our kids, we can't say, well, just we're going to protect you and shield you from it. Because then they're going to turn 18, they're going to turn 20 and come to a place where they can make their own decisions and they're going to go buck wild. I think we have to prepare them for it. And I think Dave Ramsey, I've never heard anybody put it better when he talks about the rope and the analogy of giving out the rope. If you just wait till the child is 20 and give them the whole rope, I mean, like, imagine the way a wakeboarder gets pulled. If the rope's got too much slack in it, when the engine gets going, it'll pop it out of their hands. So it has to be gradual. You build up that tension. So with my kids, you know, I want them to understand like, hey, I'm going to put software on our devices that will keep us hopefully from getting access to these things. But I also want you to know that there's going to come a day when you're going to get to a device that doesn't have that. And the biggest protection can't just be my Disney Circle device keeping, you know, the firewall, keeping the bad things away. It has to come from your conviction in your heart that I can do things that I don't want to do, that I can do things that would feel good for a moment, but would bring consequences that would linger. And I think for myself, knowing I could do things in minutes that would last for decades. And so those are a couple of the principles that kind of are in my mind.
That's good. You know, I think about somebody who's a teaching pastor or a lead pastor or student pastor that's listening in, and you speak very open and honest and bold, and you articulate it well about this subject of sex and intimacy. They're a little bit hesitant. What would be your encouragement to them?
Nature abhors a vacuum. And if you don't teach people under your care about sex, the devil will find someone who will. And it's just the height of naivete to think, oh, well, my kid's only 11, 12. You know, I had a dad one time tell me, I can't bring my daughter to this event. She's in sixth grade. She doesn't know anything about sex. And I was asking him, I said, I get that. I respect that. You're her father. That's your prerogative. But let me ask you this. Where does she go to school? Oh, she goes to public middle school. I said, sir, with all due respect, if you're not talking to her about these things and letting the church and all that and letting that be that tag team effect that it should be, the locker room's going to do it. Instagram's going to do it. The magazines and movies are going to do it. I mean, there is such a hypersexualization going on. They're even saying girls are going through puberty faster because of that. You have guys perpetuating their adolescence and girls who are hurrying through it physically. So I just think we can't be afraid. We can't back down. Why should the enemy speak up about a topic that God is the author of?
Wow. So you have this great resource and you want it to get in the hands of everyone, obviously. I desperately want people to either get this resource in their hand or somehow utilize it in a group format. Or we're talking to pastors right now. We're talking to church leaders, ministry leaders. What is the best way, and I'm sure you've thought about this a lot more than I have, what is the best way for them to connect with this particular resource or resources around it to get this conversation going either on the platform or in a classroom environment?
Yeah, exactly, Chris. That's the key thing. It's that conversation and utilizing it as a tool. One of the thoughts that I feel like God gave me about how Swipe Right was meant to be utilized was that it should be the basis for transforming an awkward conversation with your kids about sex into an ongoing dialogue that would lead to wise choices. I don't know at what point, maybe it was Hollywood who decided it's a sex talk. And when you say, have you had, people say, have you had the talk? And as though it's all one moment. And I think that conjures up the image of the dad or the mom, you know, like having this really unpleasant, you know, interchange with their child where in one setting, they enlighten them about the birds and the bees. And it's almost like they assume the kid knows nothing. Kid already knows everything. And the dad's not enjoying it. The mom's uncomfortable about it. And they're almost just hoping everyone involved, hope it gets over with soon. Mm-hmm. And I think that we should banish that from our thoughts. First of all, it should never be one discussion. I mean, in the Bible, we talked about when you're walking by the road, when you're in the kitchen, when you're sitting down, when you're getting up, when you're going to bed, just talk about these things, these principles, these precepts, the oracles of God. And on sexuality, you see in Proverbs, you know, hey, here's something about money. Oh, here's something about being a kind person when it comes to your relationships. Oh, here's something about sex. Oh, and beware of the promiscuous woman. And I love so much that, you know, what the Ramsey ministry is so known for is money. But here's something that comes up equally often in the book of Proverbs. Not only is the, you know, the borrower, you know, slave to the lender, but also the woman who has honey on her tongue and flatters with her speech and draws you away from your wife of your youth, or if you're not married, draws things out of you that were meant for you to save for your wife or your husband one day. These are things that are going to cause you to one day feel like you have an arrow going through your liver. Now, that doesn't sound pleasant to me.
No.
So I would say, like in a group setting, going through Swipe Right, talking about it, saying, hey, did you know this is out there? You're going to be out there in the world. This is one thing that's going to be happening. I want this on your radar. Then you're not going to be the last person speaking on these subjects. You'll be the first. And then I think listening is always key. And keep the conversation going. Keep them talking. And I think vulnerability is so powerful. So many parents I talk to, they don't speak to their kids about sex because they feel like they don't have moral authority because they didn't do things God's way. Maybe they got saved later in life, or maybe they were in the church, but, you know, messing around. And so they feel like, well, how do I tell them to do something I didn't do myself? And I would think that take Psalm 51 as your cue. David said, once I've been restored, I will teach sinners in the way. You know, he did obviously everything he shouldn't have done with Bathsheba and all that, but he still said, hey, when you restore me, I'm going to speak up about this. And I think what David was saying is so important for us. Let your mess become a message.
So good. Well, thank you for helping us with that. It's definitely one of those things we don't really know how to shepherd, and you definitely gave us some direction. Another thing that we really have a tough time with shepherding is grief. You said that you experienced some tremendous grief, and you went to go look for resources, and there was nothing out there to help you through what you're experiencing. Why don't you do that? Why don't you just kind of back up a little bit, and why don't you walk us through what you did experience? There, I know half of our audience probably already knows, but what's happened in your life and how you've processed it is so encouraging to so many. And then half our audience has never heard it, but a major tragedy in your life, and then what you experienced and the reason why you launched Through the Eyes of a Lion.
Yeah. The journey of Through the Eyes of a Lion was very similar to Swipe Right in that way, because if I could go back in time, if I could get in the Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure time booth and go back to, you know, sixth grade Levi, I would hand him a copy of Swipe Right. I mean, it was the things that I would have said to my younger self. With Eyes of a Lion, I very much wrote the book that, like you said, I wished I could have found. So backstory on that, in 2012, my wife, Jenny, and I, and our daughters, were preparing for Christmas. At the time, there were four girls in our house, so we since then have had a son. So there's two of us males in the house, which is, you know, we got to stick together. I'll tell you that. But four little girls, and my second born daughter at the time was 5 years old in kindergarten. Her name is Lenya, and it's a Russian word that means lion. And so we nicknamed her Lenya Lion. And at five, on the 20th of December, 5 days before Christmas, she had an asthma attack while we were wrapping Christmas presents and getting ready for the holidays. And all of a sudden she had tightness of breath and wasn't breathing well. And so we gave her asthma medicine and it didn't work. Her breath got tight and then she stopped breathing. I mean, this was so out of the blue. I mean, we're just completely shocked by this. I had literally said to my wife moments before this happened, I got my sermon written. I feel so relaxed right now. Now, I'm not a normally relaxed person. It takes a deep tissue massage for me to ever feel relaxed. I'm pretty high strung, type A, go, 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 on to the next thing. And so to say to my wife, I feel very relaxed right now, was about as odd for me as anything. And so to have the tranquility of that ruptured by an emergency was so disorienting. And we called 911. We did CPR. We were obviously praying. But long story short, she never regained consciousness. And she went to heaven that night without a chance to say goodbye or any way to prepare for it. So we began the unexpected journey through grief. And obviously we have hope and we believe we'll see her again and all of that. But what I wasn't prepared for was just the complexity of navigating the human side of it that Jesus modeled for us so well. He knew Lazarus was in heaven. He knew Lazarus was, matter of fact, was going to come back in 3 days after he died, but he still was full of grief and he still wept and he still allowed the humanness of who he was to show. And I think what I found was hurting with hope still hurts, and it hurts like hell, even when you know someone you love has gone to heaven. And so going through all that, which is a process that I'm still going through. I mean, it's been 4 years. I'm still very much going through it. I feel like I've gotten stronger, though the weight of it hasn't gotten any lighter. And I tell people that this will never get any lighter, but you, if you trust God for the strength he wants to give you, he'll make you stronger. If you resist the urge to numb yourself, you know, it's the easiest thing in the world to resort to alcohol or drugs to numb away, or even entertainment or shopping or anything you could do to numb away the feelings that you have in life. The problem, though, is if you numb, it numbs the good feelings and the bad. And so eventually you'll come to a place where you feel nothing. And so the choice Jenny and I made was, we're going to face this head on. We're going to grieve. We're going to see this. We're going to drink it in and go through it. And I remember writing in my journal, I want to let the fangs of grief be plunged right into my breast. I'm not going to hide this away or pretend like it didn't happen, shove all the pictures out. I'm going to look this thing in the eyes. If it kills me, it kills me. But if it doesn't, at least I won't have to live in fear. And that's kind of been the revelation God gave us on how to approach it, talking about it, tell the story, let God use it, you know, and let it be healed. Because if you get a piece of grit inside of an oyster, it can turn into a pearl, but the same intruder into your body or mine, it could become an abscess if it's not coated right. And the way a piece of sand gets coated with the levels of pearl, it's like God's grace. God wants to coat it with his grace, but you have to open up to him and allow that to happen. And so all that we learned and all that we faced, I mean, there were so many different moments and things, getting to share the gospel with some of the ambulance drivers and seeing them come to faith and seeing my daughter's eyes be given out and people receive cornea transplant surgery and receive sight through it, all, little things like that, and the revelation that was attached to it, I realized there was lessons in it. And so I compiled that in a book called Through the Eyes of a Lion that was more a manifesto for high octane living in the midst of grief than it was a manual for grieving.
Well, that's a big difference too. Thank you for sharing that, by the way. I know that's still hard to talk about and you decide to do it because I don't want to put words in your mouth, but what I sense from your ministry is that you're trying to leverage the past to give God glory. I started off the conversation by saying what I really love about you is you attack tough situations head on. And I would say probably the second thing that I love about your ministry is the urgency in which you do it, the urgency in your vernacular, the urgency in your just the energy and the anticipation, the expectancy. And this is from looking far off. You know, it's not like I'm sitting in your seats at your church every week, but just my perception of your ministry and how you've kind of touched me and my wife and our family. Swipe Right was written out of a past, an issue, a past issue. And Through the Eyes of a Lion, obviously through a past tragedy. How much of that is your urgency? How much is it because of those kind of things in your life? And I'm sure there's more than that you haven't written about. But how much of that fuels you on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, it's so cool that you would use that word, Chris, the word urgency. And that is part of a prayer I pray every time I preach, is I pray that God would help me to preach the sermon like it's my first time and like it's my last time. And I've always hoped that without ever using the word, that there would be a palpable sensation of urgency and enthusiasm. I think Jesus spoke with passion. The Bible says, you know, he spoke with authority, not like the scribes and Pharisees who were just kind of speaking from their head. You got to move from your head to your heart. And I think I want, like Christ, to have a zeal that eats me up. I want there to be a passion and an enthusiasm, but there also needs to be an urgency. And it says Jesus did what he did knowing that the night was coming when no one can work. And when we realize that A, we're not promised tomorrow, and B, that Christ could come back at any moment, though I don't understand it all, I believe that the heavens could roll up like a scroll and Christ could come for his church that would set in motion a series of events that would lead to Christ's rule here on this earth. And in that day, if Christ is on the earth, we can't share our faith with anybody. Think about it. You walk up to somebody in heaven and say, you know, do you know about Jesus? They'll be like, yeah, he's right over there. You know? And so, hey, we got this shot. This is it. We got to leave it all out there. Like Bruce Springsteen, you know, why do people talk about his concerts? He's in a puddle. He has to be scooped off the stage. And I think that Christ lived that way. And I think that we should live with passion, enthusiasm, and there should be that sense of urgency. Someone said that 10,000 years from now, we won't be able to change what we did here and now. But if we live right, we'll be enjoying the treasure and reward as a result of what we've done.
Wow.
And so I hope that we all sense that, hey, Jesus died for us to live this life of purpose and passion, and B, we're not promised any more than this hour. So we have to make this moment count.
So good. I knew I needed to talk to you. Such good stuff. I guess my last question, let's just say that our audience, you know, thousands of leaders around the country and around the world, you were to hold a staff meeting, like literally the listenership is your staff and you're walking in and you wanted to kind of have a just a come to Jesus moment with leadership in the church, the Big C Church. And you want to just give one opportunity. Hey, here's one opportunity. I don't know if it's a challenge. I don't know if it's an opportunity. If maybe it's just something where you want to like kind of encourage us, whatever it is, what would you tell us if we were in a staff meeting led by Levi?
I would tell you this. If you want to be a great and effective leader, you need to begin by leading yourself. You're not going to lead anybody better than you lead yourself. And so it's like, before I expect my team in my office to listen to me or the organization or our church at large or the people who I'm going to communicate to in books and tell them what to do, how am I doing it talking to myself and leading myself and listening to myself? I think when you actually pick that away, you are a leader of yourself, your time, your decisions, your actions. And so am I speaking to myself with life? Am I my coach or am I my critic? I would ask you the same question. When you think the 60,000 thoughts a day or whatever it is that goes through your head, are you choosing to filter out the ones that are not productive? Or are you letting your head think on any thought that comes in? Are you speaking to yourself and saying, "This, you're the worst. This, what'd you do that for? I can't believe you. You always do that. Story of my life." Or are you saying, "Hey, you got this. Come on. God loves you. I've got everything I need to do, everything I've been called to do. I have the mind of Christ. I'm dead to sin. I'm alive in God. I'm as bold as a lion." Your self-talk, it matters so much. In the athletic world and in the business world, they get this. They bring in psychological training to make people mentally tough, mentally strong. You see it when someone falls to pieces on a sport field because they, you know, didn't have a good first inning or first half, and all of a sudden they just, boom, they get devastated. You just watch them. They're a shell of themselves. And that's someone who's not mentally strong. You know, Tiger Woods used to famously take 7 steps after a shot. His 7 steps would be either to celebrate a good one or to mourn a bad one. But after those 7 steps, baby, it's over. And what's done's done. Now it's on to the next thing. And I think sometimes we get defeated. You know, you have a bad meeting or you make the wrong choice. You come in with the wrong demeanor. You have the wrong attitude. And all of a sudden, we feel like we're in a downward spiral. We can't start over. And I think leadership-wise, take your 7 steps. Lead yourself towards victory. Make the decision to hard reset your soul. Unplug the USB and plug it back. It's okay, it's not working. Boot it up again. New meeting, new chance, new opportunity. So I would just challenge the leaders out there, lead yourself well. Lead yourself in your time management and how you wake up and get in your right rhythms, working with your own soul, with Jesus obviously first. And then is a trip to the gym early in the morning or late in the afternoon better for you? What ways are you allowing your productivity to be diminished by Instagram or email? I read the book Eat That Frog recently, and they were talking about how your brain gets a dopamine hit when you go on email. And so he said, wait to do it until you've done something good and read the email as a reward. When you wake up first thing with email, you get a dopamine hit right away. You haven't even done anything. And now your brain's craving more of that all day, and you're in a downward spiral. On my best days, I wait until I've done a significant piece of work for an hour or two, or even a 25-minute block on sermon prep, book writing, whatever. And then as a reward, I'll just quickly go on email or Instagram, but not do that first thing. And so little things like that, just choosing to lead yourself before you expect anybody else to follow you.
Well, throughout our entire conversation, you've given us a lot of homework. We have a lot of things that we can work on. Levi, man, thank you for your time. Thank you for your ministry. And really just thank you for who you are. You're a very inspiring pastor, but you're a very inspiring person. So thank you for who you are.
Thank you for having us. That's very kind. Thank you for having me on and for what you're doing for leaders all across the country.
Well, straight brilliance from our friend Levi Lusco. So let's talk about takeaways. Actually, you know what? Let's do this. How about some good questions for us to discuss with our team? Maybe you're a campus pastor and there's a bunch of campus pastors and you guys can all get together and discuss this together. Or maybe you're a campus pastor and you want to do this with your team that you lead there at the campus. And maybe it's an executive team or a senior leadership team. And maybe it's a youth team. And again, paid, non-paid. Some of you are from bigger organizations, bigger churches. Some of you are from smaller churches. There's different stages of development. So paid, non-paid. Who is on the journey with you? Maybe it's an HR team. Those of you from larger churches. Maybe it's a care team or those folks that you do ministry with. And here's some questions for us as we discuss the content from today's episode. Some questions that come to my mind are, how are we doing when it comes to teaching practical tips to win over premarital sex and pornography? What are we doing? Do we give tips? Are we helping out with this? So that's one question that comes to my mind. Another one is, how are we doing when it comes to teaching practical tips on overcoming grief? Who are we pointing people toward, like some kind of counselor or something? Of course, there's pastoral advice that we need to be equipped to do. But then there's also counseling, which is kind of another level. How are we helping people when it comes to grief? Another one is, how are we doing when it comes to leading ourselves well? We finished our conversation with Levi there with how are we leading ourselves? Now, what is possibly one area where each of us can improve? Is it our physical lives? Is it our devotional life? Maybe relationships? As you well know, if you've been following leadership for some time, discipline bleeds. So when we are undisciplined in one area, well, then it bleeds into other areas. It's a slippery slope. On the good side, when you're disciplined in one area, you are disciplined in other areas. You know, like for instance, the way you dress is the way you act. You know, if you go into the office and you're dressed in a real casual mood, right, you're going to be real casual, right? Discipline bleeds. If you come in and you're all sharp and ready to rock, you're going to be ready to rock with your posture, with the way you talk to people. Discipline bleeds. And then, you know, on the bad side, when discipline bleeds in a negative way, the slippery slope, well, that's when insecurity sinks in. And then when insecurity sinks in, then comes the decisions where we make decisions and react based on our insecurity, which is never a good thing. And we need to understand, like Levi said, we are our best selves when we are internally proud of the way that we're leading ourselves. So great question is, what are some areas that I can lead myself in a better way? And then lastly, another question that comes to my mind is, and this is regarding the last little bit, the little bonus that Levi mentioned. How can we realign our daily tasks to make sure that we're time blocking and being as productive as possible? Maybe you do have that social media problem. Maybe you have that email problem. How can you navigate through your day in a little bit more of a productive way? Again, his name is Levi Lusco, and he is the author of the best-selling book, Through the Eyes of a Lion, and the book called Swipe Right. Now, these are both amazing books. Some of you have read these before, and you would testify that these are incredible resources. I highly recommend them, and the reason why I recommend them to this community is because I know it'll equip you to better shepherd who God has trusted you with. God has trusted you to shepherd those folks when it comes to these real life tensions in our world, premarital sex, pornography, and how we handle grief. If you'd like to connect with Levi more, feel free to visit his website at levilusco.com or reach out to him on social media at Levi Lusco. That's LeviLusko. Hey, before we sign off today, I want to drop something in your ear. You know, here we are, approaching the beginning of the year. As you're well aware, January is coming up, and it's the time of year when people are the most motivated to get control over their finances. Now, there are certain times of the year that we have to leverage where people are at. Now, kind of like speaking on family and speaking on generosity during the Christmas season, I want to boldly ask you, what are you doing to teach people how to handle their finances? And no matter your role in the church, I'm not just talking to lead pastors, although I am. No matter your role in the church, what are you doing to help your team and their teams with their finances? I know it can be awkward to bring up the conversation of finances, assuming that they need help. That's almost offensive, right? Well, the best way to overcome that is for everyone to go through the process together. And what happens is this removes the stigma that comes with going through a finance class. It's not about being broke, although 88% of America is living paycheck to paycheck or worse. But it's about learning to steward God's finances the way that the Bible teaches. It's not about being broke or not broke. It's just about living a godly life when it comes to finances. And the cool part is when people get this, they're freed from bondage and they can serve and give like God wants them to, like you want them to, and like they want to. I challenge you to do more. Now, this is the number one pain point in the church today. No matter what they're driving, no matter what they're wearing, no matter what they're saying about their jet skis and lake houses, folks, this affects all other areas of their life. Now, take marriage, for example. The number one cause of divorce in America is money fights and money problems. And we can't just tell them to do something. We have to teach them how. It's kind of like the gym. Another great thing in the beginning of the year to discuss. It's a You know, it's the trainer that helps us get results, not the person at the front door that checks in our tag and gives us a few pointers and a high five from behind the desk. You know, both are helpful, right? They both motivate. But is learning how to have the right technique on the machines, how to dig deep for one more rep on the machines, and that's where the growth and results come in. It's that teaching how, not just the telling to. And to stay with the analogy just a little bit more, I was thinking about CrossFit and Shakeology and boot camps and what many of us are involved in. What they do so well is the implementation of community. Community aspect, they do that so well. And we're all in this together, you know. And of course, in the community, some need it more than others, but everyone has something they can improve on in those communities, right? So as you meet together as a team and you go through the questions, the Levi Lusco questions, no matter what your team looks like in this season, would you consider leveraging this season and starting classes as a team and possibly as a whole church? I know we've helped over 1,000 churches go through it together as the entire church, and the results have been absolutely mind-blowing. And if you're not the person that makes that kind of decision, and maybe it's one of those things where you lead up and suggest it to your leadership team. So if you're interested in talking more about this, hey, please email me at chrisbrownonair@stewardship.com. I don't hide the fact that this is a passion of mine. And of course, when you email me, we can discuss it more. But I do strongly believe that the community is looking, your community is looking for direction from someone when it comes to this area. And they're not getting it from the school system. And they're certainly not getting it any kind of biblical cues from the way that the government handles finances. It just breaks my heart that people can't even see their need for Christ because all they can think about is the size of that next paycheck and if it's going to be enough to cover what they've already spent. Every dollar that comes into their hands does not have an opportunity for the future because it has an obligation to the past. So in a lot of ways, when I think of the times that I did not lead my teams well, you know, in the specific area, I feel like I was basically negligent as a leader. I'm pretty hard on myself when it comes to that. And again, you don't have to have it all figured out in regards to how this looks within your ministry. Just shoot me an email at chrisbrownonair@stewardship.com and we'll just chat our way through it. Well, folks, that wraps up another edition of the Leadership Momentum Podcast. Hey, stay tuned for conversations with, and these are some of the conversations that are coming up, Robbie Gallaty, Pastor Bill and Brian Purvis, Pastor Brady Boyd, Daniel Fusco, Daryl Strawberry will be joining us here on the podcast. Judah Smith, of course, we all love him. Pastor Rick Bazette from the great state of Arkansas. Philip Wagner out in California. Matt Redman's going to be joining us, and also Pastor David Crank. Many more. Don't miss these great conversations by subscribing. And of course, let's stay connected on social media at Chris Brown On Air. Well, folks, until next time, Merry Christmas to you. And we'll connect again on the first Monday in January. I love y'all. And as always, if there's anything that I can do for you, please reach out. I would be honored. God bless you.
Thanks for joining us for the Leadership Momentum Podcast with Chris Brown, brought to you by Ramsey Solutions. To learn more about Momentum, go to stewardshipcentral.org/solutions. Loved what you heard today and didn't want to miss another episode? Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. While you're there, share your feedback by leaving a review. Finally, stay up to date with Chris Brown, including his Life, Money, and Hope podcast, on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram by following @ChrisBrownOnAir. On behalf of your host, Chris Brown, and the team at Ramsey Solutions, thanks for joining us for the Leadership Momentum Podcast.